In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Thanks for listening on Monday, March 11th, 2013, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Changes are coming quickly to the IT operations at agencies across government. That means IT leaders need to be experts in lots of things besides boxes and bits. Managing change will be just as critical as managing technology. Two guests in studio with me to talk about that issue today. Major General Barbara Fast, U.S. Army retired, is a senior vice president at CGI. She's a business unit manager for the company's Army work, including cybersecurity offerings, and had leadership roles in the Army, Joint Commands, and the National Security Agency. General, it's a pleasure to see you. Thanks for coming in today, Barb.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
Happy to do it. And welcome as your first time as a guest on the program.
It is.
It's good to have you. My other guest today is a veteran of the show, Molly O'Neill, Vice President in the Strategic Operations Group at CGI and former Chief Information Officer at the Environmental Protection Agency, and in that role, a member of the Executive Committee of the Federal CIO Council. Molly, it's great to have you back. Thanks
for
coming in today. The issue of change management, Molly, is one you and I have talked about before. As CIOs talk more about wanting their roles to evolve, what are you seeing them getting better at in the atypical soft skills kinds of areas? And what are you still seeing some of your former colleagues as trying to work on to become this new generation of CIO?
Well, I think now more than ever, CIOs have to get out of what I'll say the wires and the boxes business. And part of it is because technology is moving so fast, whether it's in the cloud, where people are trying to move to the cloud. In order to do that, it means there's a lot of change management that has to occur. You can't just push things. There's a sort of a different feel in terms of how you sell movement to, a new approach, both internally with the people who work below you, as well as up the chain as well. So I think a lot of the skills are about learning to manage not just below, but above and to the side.
Yeah. That structure is something that you're familiar with, of course, Barb, from being in the service, because that's integral to any leadership role anywhere in the military. What are the skills that you learned and have taught your folks in the military that would apply in the civilian world, too, in that idea of managing up, down, and sideways?
That's a great question. I think that what we saw was an evolution of commanders only dealing with their S3s or their G3s or their J3s, their operational people. And the big change was to say that there really is a larger set of operations than just the conventional operations that we think of, air, sea, land battles. And so we've seen where the intelligence professionals and the communications professionals have become part of that inner circle now, and that decisions have to be made in a much broader context than they've been made in the past, so that, for example, how you conduct your operations in part more and more depends on the network. We are very network-centric. And so it's important for that CIO or that communicator then to understand the operations and vice versa. It's very important for that commander or now the CEO to understand a little bit more about the network and how the network might affect those operations.
It strikes me that understanding that urgency is very easy for a CO, especially in a combat situation, because men and women's lives are on the line, where Molly, in a civilian agency in a different setting, that urgency might not be as readily apparent, although it's just potentially is critical. Is that fair to say?
Right. The magnitude, I think, may be different, but I think there's a lot of parallels between sort of defense and civilian. And just in terms of you're forced into communication for all the right reasons on the defense side to help protect and to move things. But on the civilian side, even if you don't have that kind of mission, I think sort of the raising of the scale in terms of even negotiating budgets now, there's, CIOs have to have the ability to have that close relationship between the deputy secretary or deputy administrator and the CFOs as well, because you can't, understand new ways to do things no matter what the mission is unless you have that upward channel of communication to explain some of the idiosyncrasies within, some of the technology bases, whether it's cyber, to understand the importance of cyber or what the impact are to the mission, whether it's defense or non-defense. So I think that those kind of leadership skills translate both ways.
Mm-hmm. Barb, when you analyze these issues, especially cyber issues for military and civilian structures in government, are there differences that you see in that management up, down, sideways that would be easy to solve, or are these pretty complex issues to try to deal with?
I do think it's pretty complex. It's complex for two reasons. It's complex because technology is always changing, and it's complex because the threat is changing. And the educational aspect of on the part of CIOs or communications experts to educate the CEO or to educate the commander is absolutely paramount, because at some point it becomes a cost-benefit analysis. In industry, it's a cost in terms of real dollars for what you spend on communications and on the protection of the data. And in the military, it's what you spend in terms of capital for the mission and an accomplishment of the mission that has to be done using the network. And it's very scaled these days because it takes you all the way from the enterprise level, where you can operate inside of a building, out to the mobile environment. And whether you're in the military or whether you're in industry, you're in the mobile device world, which has greatly complicated and extended the challenges.
And Molly, you mentioned cloud computing and some of the issues surrounding that. And I have in front of me a story that Jason Miller reported last week about some resistance to the cloud. And it strikes me that part of that might be the kind of touching on the something that you alluded to, and that's the idea that when I was a wire and box person, I had control over this, and I could go and hug my servers, and I felt very comfortable, and I know that I was needed because nobody else really understood that stuff in the C-suite the way that I did. When that moves to the cloud, then what do I have? And that seems to me that that's part of maybe what some folks are just trying to figure out, is what's my leadership role. It seems to me it's bigger and more important, but because they're not actually owning and holding this technology anymore, that's been a little bit of a hard change for people to make internally.
Well, that's part of the problem. So I wouldn't say it's all of the problem, because it's really a change in ownership, right? So you could I was explaining to someone earlier today that, and it's not an exact parallel, but if you think about sort of change and why we do things, what it means is it's looking at things at a much more strategic level, right, and owning that level, to be frank, because even in the cloud situation, you may do a private cloud, you may do put things in a community cloud and feel like you're not hugging, right, mm-hmm. your virtual machines, right? But you do have SLAs in place. You can control a lot of the other thing of how that is run. You can control other things that you're not normally thinking about controlling. You just have to have it. It's just a different perspective. And I think about sort of the evolution right now and sort of where we are in technology. So when I was in the federal government, we were worried about, you know, trusted internet connections and sort of the resistance to doing that. We wanted to have as many internet connections as we possibly can, because what if, right? Mm-hmm. And so we went through that cultural change that says, you know what, you don't need as many, and we know why, because it's better security. And then we went through the federal desktop configuration because of all the intrusions coming in with all the different, you know, things on the laptops and on the desk. And no one wanted to do that from a cultural perspective either, because it may not be the CIO losing control, but it was the programmatic folks losing control to say, well, it was hard. You're not going to be able to download your own stuff, but it's important because, right?
Right.
And now we're sort of saying, okay, we've secured the laptops and the desktops, maybe not the mobile devices yet, right, Barb? We're trying to control the internet connections. Now we're trying to say, is how do we control everything else, right, in a way that provides more security and less risk, right? And that can be in the cloud, or it could be through mobile implementations as well. And I think part of it is just sort of understanding this is just the next evolution. There is a cultural issue about not hugging things, but it's also forcing this, as you just started this program, saying you got to sort of rise above it and think a little bit more strategically to figure out what assets do I need to hug closely,
yeah.
What assets can I just manage differently, and then what assets do I not need to manage because I've got, you know, bigger risks in other areas of my infrastructure.
Now, we've said the word change about 5,000 times already in the course of the program, Barb, but it strikes me that I hear the word opportunity from IT leaders in government a lot more often than I ever expected to, given where we are budget-wise. You know, when we talk about sequestration, mm-hmm. continuing resolution, all the other things that we'll get into over the course of the program. But that I find very striking, and I wonder if you're hearing that also from the leaders that you talk to in government and why you think that is.
I think there is opportunity here, even though it's a scary idea, this whole cybersecurity, and we see the enormous amount of malware that hits our networks every day. The fact of the matter is we just live in a bad neighborhood, and we have to get over that. And just because you live in a bad neighborhood doesn't mean that you don't go out on the street. It just means that you don't always answer your door. You know who's coming in. So when you take it from that perspective, life goes on, and the opportunities now for some of the consolidation, it started with data center consolidations. Now there are efficiencies to be gained by going to cloud computing environments. There are shared abilities, even though we're in a nascent stage on information sharing between not only government agencies, but also between government and private industry. And I think it's actually drawn the world a little closer than it has been in the past.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing or just the way the world is?
It just is. I think it just is. It's the next evolution in how we operate. We were already a global economy, and now we're networked globally, and we just have to be able to live and operate in that environment, and it gives us great opportunities, but with those opportunities come some risks, and you need to understand the risks, and you need to manage the risks.
My guests on In Depth with Francis Rose today, Molly O'Neill and Barb Fast of CGI, and we'll continue our conversation in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Mom, I had the best dream.
Well, good morning to you, too.
Okay, so I was a knight. I had a sword, and our house was a castle. It was this angry dragon. It was kind of scary.
Oh, yeah?
But I protected the castle.
Oh, that's my brave little man. I'm glad our castle is safe.
Your home is your castle, and sometimes you need help defending it. The National Association of Realtors supports maintaining homeowner tax incentives because they make home ownership more affordable for more families. Learn more at houselogic.com.
Paid for by the National Association of Realtors.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel went to Afghanistan late last week on his first visit as head of the Pentagon, and he said there are plenty of challenges ahead as NATO hands over the country's security to the Afghans. He said in his own words, "We're still at war." He was warning the U.S. and its allies to remain focused on the mission while noting that the U.S. has never intended to stay in Afghanistan indefinitely. He said the transition has to be done right. I'm J.J. Green.
Every day, drug smuggling and violence threaten America's southwest border. Border Patrol agents need to identify and track moving targets more than 7 miles away. Only General Dynamics has built the tower system that keeps watch over 40,000 miles of U.S. coastline. Only EADS has installed systems that protect more than 8,000 miles of national land border worldwide. Together, they are the right team to protect the nation's borders. Learn more at borderdetection.com.
Hi, this is Dave Gran, founder and president of MilitaryByOwner.com, a leading provider of advertising services and support to military families trying to sell or rent their homes. When looking for a web development company to design our site, we needed a battle-tested winner. Thankfully, we chose AmericanEagle.com. After reviewing many website developers that potentially could build a site for us, what tilted the scales in favor of AmericanEagle.com was their depth of experience and knowledge, 17 years of successful online development. AmericanEagle.com has helped the Military By Owner website to become a leader in the military real estate market. Working with AmericanEagle.com, we've experienced exceptional service and, most importantly, great returns on our investment. For these reasons, we're a proud partner with AmericanEagle.com for all our online needs. I strongly recommend AmericanEagle.com.
Call AmericanEagle.com at 703-WEBSITE to learn how they can develop a website solution for you. That's AmericanEagle.com, 703-WEBSITE.
Remember that executive order to promote diversity and inclusion at agencies? I'm Emily Kopp. On Tuesday's Federal Drive, the Office of Personnel Management's Veronica Villalobos tells us what's happened over the past year. And FEMA is changing the way you learn about emergencies. We'll talk with Assistant Administrator Damon Penn. It all starts at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Molly O'Neill and Barb Fast of CGI, my guests on the program today. Barb, you said something during the break that I thought was pretty interesting relative to the not just private sector companies that are trying to deal with cyber issues, but federal agencies too. You said some of them are more capable of defending themselves than others. And the way that you said it in the context of the conversation we were having sounded like you were saying that it doesn't really have anything to do with the size or the robustness of the organizations. It had, sounds like it, you're talking more about mindset and approach to doing it. Did I hear you correctly, and can you expand on that a little bit?
Sure. I think there are a couple of different aspects to it. One, there are some governmental agencies like the Department of Defense who must secure, and they have to secure their networks for very good reasons. There are others who do not have the same compliance regulatory necessities that say the Department of Defense has. So I do think that there are some differences in how you have to approach the problem. On the industry side, similarly, there are some industries that have to be more compliant than others. So if I'm building the F-35, for example, I might have to have a lot more regulatory compliance in effect in my organization than if I'm designing golf balls to be hit out on the golf course. So I do think there is just a difference in the compliance aspect. But there is also a difference, quite frankly, in affordability, because what we see today is that small and medium-sized companies are being attacked as much, and in some cases more, than large companies who, by and large, many of the large companies, especially in the defense industry, have spent a concerted amount of time and money to secure their own networks. But little and medium-sized companies can't afford to do that. And hackers and the activists know that, and so that's where they're attacking. And once they're into the network, if they're part of a supply chain, that becomes the Achilles heel for industry and becomes de facto an Achilles heel for the government as a whole.
At what point, Molly, is it does that become a whole supply chain value? If I'm one of the big companies and I'm working with these other companies down the chain, at what point is it worth it for me to try to work with them, not just on the project that we're working on, but on security as a whole to avoid that issue? You know, I mean, your subs are turning into back doors, essentially.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that, you know, most large companies that are in the business of protecting the networks or running a network or running some of the infrastructure for both their private sector clients, and they could be government or they could be financial, right? Or they could be, you know, utilities or something like that, I think are really sort of catching on to that. And they have been for the last couple of years, because as the supply chain has become more important, and as we're seeing sort of attacks change from network to, you know, pieces within pieces, I think that some of those stories that have come up for the last couple of years have really sort of raised the mark in terms of awareness for companies to understand the supply chain is really important. That's why you see that as one of the security controls around FedRAMP, actually, to make sure that you've got a good plan and for your supply chain. So understanding it's the whole way through the process. I think it's just a maturing of, you know, sort of the cyber and the defense community, actually, because if you think about it, and what Barb is right, I mean, defense has always been protecting, right, whether it's physical or logical or whatnot. And I think as we've seen the attacks change, people are much more aware whether it's a subcontractor or a provider or, you know, some kind of vendor along your chain, that it's just as important for not just you to protect your network, but all the way through.
Molly just mentioned something that you touched on earlier in the program, Barb, and that is the changing nature of the threats. And it seems to me that the threat vectors changing in two dramatically different directions. One of them is destruction, in which the bad guys want to just melt you down. And the other one is espionage, where they have a vested interest in maintaining access to your system for as long as possible, so that they can extract as much information as possible. How do you kind of change your strategy, if at all, from just trying to firewall yourself off to trying to prevent those two very different ends of threats?
Well, I think you bring up a really good point. Attackers attack the network for different reasons. So you have everything from what we call these advanced persistent threats, these very sophisticated threats that could, in fact, thinking about a concerted effort to destroy, all the way down to somebody who just wants to steal your intellectual property or steal something out of your network, to just the guys who just want to have fun just because it's fun. So you do have to protect your network, I think, against the spectrum of the threat. I think the important thing is to know what your data is and what do you need to protect the most. And that's how you secure your network. And you do that based on the data you need to protect the most, your most important family jewels, and the cost of doing business. What are you willing to lose? I think that as we look at the threat, you have to look not just at the network itself, but you have to look at the people, because at the end of the day, there's a person who's behind these attacks, or there's a person behind intellectual property being stolen. And that takes us to a little different level than we've thought about, because we sometimes think about this as just a network problem, but it's not. It's a people problem as well. And it's people outside your network, and it's people who are inside. And I think we've spent a lot more time thinking about now the outside threat, the firewall that can hopefully keep you from entering, though I think that's a bit Pollyannish. But we have to also think about the insider threat, because many of these are our own employees who either inadvertently or intentionally are leaking information outside of the network. So it broadens the whole scope of the problem and, again, takes you beyond just the CIO to this becomes a company problem.
I agree with you. I hear a lot about the difference between the outsider and the insider threat, and I want to explore that a little bit, Molly, when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests are Barb Fast and Molly O'Neill from CGI on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be right back.
Leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
What is community policing? How does it contribute to the safety of neighborhoods? What is the mission of the DOJ's Office of Community-Oriented Policing Services? How has the era of fiscal austerity changed the way law enforcement operates? And how can technology enhance community policing? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and more with Bernard Malekian, director of the COPS Office, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
The Washington Wizards are back.
Spins, fades, banks, scores, and one. Okafor.
Up court to Crawford. No look pass. Ariza. Stop. Joanne.
Crawford drives baseline. Whips it in the corner. Sheldon Mack for three.
Single game tickets are on sale now. Call 202-661-5050. That's 202-661-5050. Or buy your tickets online at WashingtonWizards.com/tickets.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
Today is the day to make the switch, to choose to save money with Ackerman Security Systems. Why Ackerman? Security is what they do. With Ackerman, you get the professionalism of the Washington area's only UL and CSAA 5 Diamond Certified Monitoring Center for just $18.95 a month. If you're paying more, you can switch for free and start saving today. Why wait? Call Ackerman today and receive up to 3 months of basic monitoring free. Call 888-999-1070 or AckermanSecurity.com.
What do you know about losing weight? From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Researchers say a lot of the things people think they know about losing weight are wrong, and the scientists have a list of 7 myths to watch for. Among the myths, setting realistic goals. The researchers say people who dream big can be motivated to lose some weight, even if it's not all they expected. Another, slow but steady is more effective than fast. The scientists say you can lose weight rapidly, but they caution against an unhealthy crash diet. So, what does work? At the University of Alabama at Birmingham, David Allison says it's pretty basic.
You've just got to reduce energy intake and/or increase energy expenditure through largely physical activity and exercise.
The report in the New England Journal of Medicine was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering it. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Barb Fast and Molly O'Neill of CGI, my guests on the program today. And Barb, you were talking about the various kinds of people threats before we went to the break. And as you were talking about the outside versus the inside threat, I was writing down under insider threats, deliberate and accidental. And you posed a question that I thought was really interesting during the break, which was, does it really matter? And I was that a rhetorical question, or is there some meat behind that, I wonder?
Well, I think it does matter, but the outcome could be the same. So you're the loss of intellectual property or the loss of some other, you know, financial money or some other very important, valuable to the company, it really doesn't matter whether it's from somebody who's intentionally done it or not intentionally done it. However, what you want to do is one, you want to educate because you want to mitigate it to the extent that you can. And the mitigation on the unintentional side is to educate your workforce. And so training becomes a very important component of how you deal with the insider threat. And education and training, quite frankly, can be your biggest ally. And it doesn't cost a whole lot to get a lot in return. The other individual, though, the one who does it intentionally, you want to find out who it is. And again, you want to try to get ahead of the problem. Who's the disgruntled employee? Who's about to leave the company? Who potentially has access to information? How do you go about doing that? And how do you make sure that you don't violate their privacy? Or what is the expectation of privacy as you deal with that? But there are certain periods of time that the risk appears to be higher than other times.
At what point, though, Molly, does training and working with your workforce, do you start to see a diminished return on investment? Because I'm sure that for several years, the Pentagon did a whole lot of training in that area, and yet they still got Buckshot Yankee.
Well, you know, there's always going to be the people who don't want to learn, right, and don't want to change. But I think the key here is continuous training, right? So it's not just a one-time, once a year. You find ways to incorporate that, what I'll say, awareness into things that aren't necessarily called training in the standard way to say, I'm not here to talk about insider threat training, right? Mm-hmm. You have annual and you have refresher and you have that kind of awareness that you have. But you also try and fold it into other things. So it really becomes part of the culture that you know that you're not leaving things down. You know, in the old days when people would leave files, they'd lock them up, and it's the same thing. So you don't want to leave things that could pose any kind of risk, as we were talking during the break. That, you know, depending on what you have, you know, is depending on available is really a risk perspective. Some things are better, not better, but are not as detrimental to a company or to the government to leak or to get taken as other things. And so to me, I think it's not just it's training, but it's incorporating sort of the knowledge into other training, into the culture. It's a continuous thing. And that's the only way you're going to get sort of diminished returns in this. Otherwise, it just becomes a, I'm going to check a box and every year I'm going to take my my insider threat training.
And then we kind of come back to where we started the conversation in the program today, which is change management and and how you get people to do things differently than they're doing them now and get them to do those things because they want to do them that way and they see value in doing them that way rather than in what's easy, which is to keep doing it the way I've always been doing it.
I'll say one more thing. You know, I was thinking about, you know, the standard thing you see in like security training is don't let someone come behind you, right, in a door when someone when you swipe your identity, right? And don't. But how often do you see that happen? I mean, anywhere, even, you know, in government buildings and whatever. And I think it's almost like it's a leadership issue. And I think that and it's not just the CIO, right? So that, you know, if you see someone who's trying to tag on, I forget what you call it, when someone tries to pull
tailgating.
Behind, tailgating, right, tailgate behind you. You know, as a leader in an organization and as a manager in an organization, you have to be the one to say, can I see your badge? Right? Because to me, that's showing, again, it's ingraining it into the culture. And if you start doing it, everyone else will do it, and it kind of moves. And it's not that check the box.
The leadership element of this may be something, too, that becomes not a technology issue and not a not even necessarily leadership. It's a an HR issue. Because I've talked to any number of HR leaders, current and former, on this program, Barb, about the idea of how the government chooses who they're going to promote. And people wind up becoming managers and leaders in government, not necessarily because they've demonstrated leadership ability, but because they've demonstrated technical ability. And you're the best widget producer, so you're going to manage all the widget producers. What are you seeing successful leaders doing to gain more leadership ability, to gain more, to train themselves in a time where training is going to be one of the first things that goes out of the budget?
I do think there is a cultural shift that is occurring. I think leaders have, not universally, but they have recognized that they have to inform themselves and not just rely on their CIOs or their network folks, not just on the systems administrators. So I do see a shift, but it's not universal. Similarly, in the boards of directors, you are starting to see experts that are coming on boards and boards becoming much more in tuned to this whole cybersecurity threat and the threat to networks and understanding what networks mean to the company. So I think I see a cultural shift that is occurring, though there's a lot more to be done. But I think it also differs from company to company in the rewards that are put into place and the incentives that are put into place for good behavior and responsible behavior. There are some companies that actually, as part of their security training, do little pop-up trainings where you might get something in your email queue and you should recognize it. And you reward that individual for recognizing that he or she was about to be spearfished or there was a piece of malware in there and they recognized it and they turned it in and they did the right behavior. So there are some ways to create a positive environment instead of it being an onerous negative environment. And as we all know, people generally tend to respond better to the positives than they do to the negatives.
Is it easier to do the negatives, though, than the positives, Molly?
Oh, absolutely it's easier.
And that's why it happens so much.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
But Barb's right. But it's the positive things that actually make the cultural change.
Right.
All right. Let's talk more about the cultural change when we come back, because that's the part that seems to be the hardest to manage right now. Barb Fast and Molly O'Neill from CGI, my guests on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Join Fisher House Foundation's team of champions at the Marine Corps Historic Half on May 19th in Fredericksburg, Virginia, to make a true difference in the lives of military service members, veterans, and their families when they need it most, during hospitalization for an unexpected injury, illness, or disease. Team Fisher House makes raising funds and awareness for the foundation easy and fun. Race lots are available until April 8th. Find out more at teamfisherhouse.org/MCHH.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes.
Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you could learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON.
Are you a federal employee or government contractor? FederalNewsRadio.com is the best source for news that helps you do your job better. Our news team brings you the latest on federal pay and benefits, technology, defense, retirement, acquisition, and the federal budget as it's happening. FederalNewsRadio.com gives a voice to the federal community. Read and hear interviews with federal leaders, members of Congress, and industry. Find it all at FederalNewsRadio.com. And while you're there, don't forget to sign up for our breaking news email alerts.
Industry and acquisition. One doesn't exist without the other. Get the latest on how the two come together on Federal News Radio. Thursday mornings at 11, listen for Amtower Off-Center, a uniquely sideways view of B to G from the marketing perspective. Thursday afternoons at 2, tune into Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron for all things procurement. And Thursdays at 3, join in-depth host Francis Rose for industry chatter about policy, regulations, and trends. Acquisition and Industry, Thursday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests today are Molly O'Neill and Barb Fast from CGI. And we're talking about, in this segment, cultural change. And this is something that is not just a technology issue. This is something that permeates pretty much every aspect of operations at federal agencies when we're in a time like we're in right now. Places, Barb, where you have seen it done successfully, whether you were the leader or you're in your role now with the company working with agency people, what are the elements of success that you see?
First, I think there's an informed leadership. So the leadership takes a personal interest in it. It's not just left in the hands of the CIO. Because let's face it, sometimes the CIO is not the one calling the shots where people really pay attention. It's oh my gosh, there's more security training, or they're going to shut down my network again. So it really it starts with informed leadership. The second thing is a good training and education program, because we talked about before that truly you get more bang for the buck out of a good training program and an educated workforce, because most of the workforce doesn't really want to do anything that's nefarious. I think the third thing is when you can actually see the fruits of the labor. So say you had a cyber attack and you can actually see what happened, and you understand what it does to your mission and potentially to your, if you're in the government, to see what it might do to shut you down or keep you from operating, or if you're in industry, oh my gosh, my intellectual property was just stolen. These are big substantive things. And so I think the more you can share the actual nature of the threat and what the threat is doing, the better off you are. People talk about the Mandiant report that just came out. I think one of the good things about the Mandiant report is that it threw a number of things out there in public that haven't been discussed in public before. Whether you believe it or not, you know, is it's up to you. However, they threw a number of things out there in public that heretofore have been more whispered in private.
And I think the reason for that, Molly, is that folks have been adverse to admitting that they've been the victims before. Is that stigma going away now with an awareness that, hey, the bad guys are trying to hit everybody on every level all over the place, so it shouldn't be news to anybody anymore that my company or my agency has been attacked?
Yeah, I think the stigma is going away. You know, I think we still have – it's probably some additional learning before all of the stigma goes away. And I do believe – and again, I think it's – I think the right kind of companies and the right kind of people are people who are saying, well, here's what I need to do to mitigate it so it doesn't happen to me the next time. These are sort of learning things. And you're right. It's going to – sometimes it's not personal half the time, right? It's not personal – well, 75% of the time it's not personal to a company or to an individual. And I think it is going down, but there's still some work to be done. Just because I think, you know, people, it's natural to be embarrassed because they think they've been done to, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's a sort of a natural instinct that a lot of people have.
Barb mentioned the Mandiant report and some of the things that are in there that kind of hadn't been spoken out loud about before. Is that healthy, do you think, Molly?
I think so. Yeah, I think putting it out makes it less of a stigma.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Helps remove that. When you looked at the Mandiant report, what surprised you? What was in there, or the fact that it was in there, as you said, these things that people had not talked about before, Barb?
I think what surprised me was the depth of the research that was gained really through public information.
Mm-hmm.
And this was an unclassified report. This was data that was achieved through unclassified means, and so it shows you how much is actually out there that you can actually discover.
The only downside I heard anybody express about that report in particular was, and there was kind of two points underneath one bullet, which was it will distract people away from all of the other threat actors that are out there besides China and focus people's attention on China. And kind of the subhead of that was China maybe isn't very good at this yet because there are other threat actors out there who don't leave as many tracks behind as the Chinese seem to for these pieces of information to be available about them.
All right. I mean, I just think it should be taken for what it is. I mean, it's clearly it's almost symptomatic of a larger problem that's out there. And you're exactly right. These were things that were discovered. What is it that we don't know?
Mm-hmm.
And
what's
going
on today?
Who's doing things? Right.
It kind of reminds me, you know, I've been a big advocate for putting information out, government information that makes sense to put it out there, mm-hmm. right? Not anything sensitive or things that can be meshed together that tell a different story.
Right.
But when the government is putting out information, 2 or 3 year old data leads to 2 or 3 year old conclusions,
mm-hmm.
right? So if you say, you know, something is happening, these threats are happening, we don't know what's happening today necessarily. We know that we did the research and found out what was happening tomorrow. So
yeah.
You can't get stuck on that. It is, as Barb said, it is what it is, but what's happening today?
And to that point, are we thinking sometimes too much, Barb, about the what and not enough about the why and the how?
Absolutely. I think that behind every attack, there's got to be intent. And I think if we're going to get to really being able to prosecute individuals or prosecute those who have done wrong, we've got to get beyond the just what happened to the why did it happen and who done it.
I want to talk a little bit about the attribution and threat mitigation element of that when we come back and how much of it may or may not be a technology problem. Excuse me. You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If I don't choke to death during the commercial break, we'll be back in just a minute with Barb Fast and Molly O'Neill from CGI.
When faced with opportunities and challenges, it's important to have a reliable information technology partner on your side. Make a confident choice with GovConnection. Our extensive experience serving the federal marketplace ensures we can identify and apply the right purchasing vehicles to equip your organization with the right tools to accomplish your mission. The IT marketplace is full of companies who claim to be different. Choose GovConnection and we'll prove it to you. Call GovConnection today at 800-800-0019. That's 800-800-0019. Sponsored by HP.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. Please join me this week for my special guest, Heather Rosen, who is the local franchise expert at FranNet. If you want to know more about her and her business, dial up FranNet.com/HRosen. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman at OFPlaw.com. Call us at 703-218-2100.
As the U.S. government adopts cloud services, virtualization, and other technologies, it must also look toward an integrated and enhanced network infrastructure. HP Converged Infrastructure, with the Flex Network architecture as the cornerstone, can revolutionize how data centers are built. Using a standards-based approach, HP Networking delivers a simpler, more secure infrastructure, enables agile service delivery, and drives business value from core to edge. Combined with HP servers, storage, and services, HP Networking protects businesses across physical and virtual environments, delivers application services in minutes versus days, and reduces networking costs. The HP Converged Infrastructure integrates servers, storage, and networking, eliminating technology silos and freeing up resources so you can focus on innovation. To plan your strategy or to learn about their open flow-enabled edge switches with full lifetime warranty and no licensing required, talk to an HP representative at 800-277-8988. That's 800-277-8988.
In times of joy, in moments of grief, broadcasters come through, even when all else fails. Today, with more ways than ever to experience the moments that transform our lives, Americans still choose broadcast radio and television more than all other media combined. We are the local broadcasters of radio and television. reaching more people, touching more lives. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Government IT acquisition professionals find innovative solutions for a cost-cutting era at Acquisition Excellence, March 21st at the Grand Hyatt downtown. Join over 500 government and industry peers to learn about acquisition innovation and workforce empowerment. GSA and the American Council for Technology and Industry Advisory Council host this education and training event. Register today at actgov.org. That's actgov.org. Look for the Acquisition Excellence link on our events page.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests today are Barb Fast and Molly O'Neill from CGI, and we talked a little bit before about threat mitigation. And I'm reminded of the cybersecurity coordinator for the White House, Mr. Daniel, speaking the other day and talking about diplomacy as a potential source of some cybersecurity threat mitigation. And I saw any number of commentaries online from various people at incredible levels of experience in this field who thought that that sounded unusual, was one word that I'll use. But given the context of what we've talked about today, that seems to make some level of sense when it comes to the idea, especially of nation states, but not just nation states, when we're trying to think about, first of all, attribution and then threat mitigation. Barb, you're nodding your head in agreement as I'm talking about this. What's running through your mind as I'm talking about that?
So I think that we haven't really talked about the active measures that we can take, and we know that there are different authorities throughout the federal government on what you can do. But what we should be doing is treating this like we would treat any other problem, in the sense that it takes all the instruments of national power to create the most powerful effect. And so diplomacy is one of those instruments of national power. We don't have a universal lexicon today for cybersecurity, let alone a universal way of dealing with it. So to the extent that you have diplomacy, and you've got a Chris Painter at State Department who's out there and really working very hard in the diplomatic community, I think that's a very good thing. To the extent that you've got Director Mueller and others who are out there working in the in law enforcement community to try to promote international protocols for how you deal with perpetrators, I think that's a very good thing. And sometimes we tend to get a little bit more fixated on cyber network attacks and offensive things that we can employ, but it is really the full spectrum of power that we need to be looking at here.
And as you use the phrase focused on what you can do, I'm reminded of what Dad always said, which was what you can do and what you should do are often two different things, Molly. And I wonder if that focus issue might be something there where we're thinking about what we're able to do, what we have the capability of doing, and not, as Barb said, thinking about what's the appropriate response given this as an incident, not just as a cyber incident.
Well, I think awareness will help with that, and I think that's why those comments were really important, that get out there to talk about diplomacy for the first time in this area. To me, I mean, it really hasn't been, as you say, talk about offense and what we can do from a cyber perspective, but we don't talk about everything that we have at our bay to employ. So I think that, you know, there's the what you should do. Well, and I think every case is going to be different, right? And so it's one of a tool. And it's about time someone kind of talks about that a little bit in terms of making sure people remember that that tool's available to us.
And it seems to me, Barb, that's a place where the military's taken a leadership role just by classifying cyber as a domain. Mm-hmm. Because when you think about it in that context, it becomes another area in which the military seeks to gain superiority over an adversary, not this special weird thing that has to do with computers and networks and all that jazz. Am I on the right track there?
I think you are. I think when you think about it as a domain too, it's you've got even the high seas. So we think about the sea power and oceans. Well, you have what's sometimes referred to as the commons in cybersecurity. So between countries, between ISPs? Who's in charge of that? How do you govern in those kinds of spaces? And it becomes very much an international problem and not just a problem of the U.S., but yet we're touched by it. And remember, this is three things. I mean, it's people, processes, and technology that we're dealing with in this particular in cyberspace.
And a couple of the, oh,
I was
going to
say, just in cyberspace, remember, we lose our boundaries, right?
Yeah.
So the physical boundaries are gone.
Right.
And that's really one of the key things, and that's why it's so important that you take that up as a main point. And so I think that's really the one of the key differences that we have today when we're fighting the battles and looking at threats.
We just have a couple of minutes left, but something that you've both now touched on in this part of the conversation is in addition to losing boundaries, we don't have there still is a lot of definitions that we don't have. There are still a lot of things that need to be defined before you can make the policy about those things with which you're still working on definitions. How much is time a factor there, do you think, Molly? How quickly do we need to come to some kind of agreement about what it is that we're dealing with, how we're going to define that, so that then we can set policy around it?
Well, I think considering I was talking to someone about this again this morning, and I was talking about how long it took to establish data standards around a very small domain. If you think about that, those are it takes years sometimes just to define like a critical water element, right, that you can use internationally. So in some respects, I think from a cyber and a network security and everything else, standards are happening a little bit faster, and I think because the repercussions are so great. So, you know, I think there has been significant move. I think timing is an issue in the world of cyber. You know, having been a CIO, you hope that you're a half a step ahead because they're changing, but you can't define standards for things you don't know about yet. You can define them as fast as you can. Try and take that half a step up and then move as long to the new ones, the faster and faster again, because it's the standards are in approaches and the policies and the regulations that help shore everything out are so important in this area.
And I think internationally that is being worked right now, but the answer is really yesterday. We needed them yesterday, but we're not there. I think that's certainly one of the roles that NIST has undertaken to a much greater degree. And then I just think we go back to at the fundamentals. This is about data and it's about people. And so how do we really ensure that we have identity management? How do we ensure that we secure the data that needs to be secured?
Ladies, I've enjoyed this conversation tremendously. We're out of time, but I thank you very much, both of you, for coming in and talking to me today. General Barb Fast, U.S. Army retired Senior Vice President at CGI and Business Unit Manager for the company's Army work, and Molly O'Neill, Vice President in the Strategic Operations Group at CGI and former CIO at the Environmental Protection Agency. My guest for the hour, the program's archived later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And hour number two of In Depth with Francis Rose is next on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.